Don't be nervous, but if you mess this up, I'm pretty much dead. Andrea aimed her right arm cannon down at Scott. He pulled himself up and pushed his abdomen against the cannon. Fire. She pulled the trigger and looked away. Keep going. Giving a nervous peek, she saw surgical staples holding together his wound. Not pretty, Scott decided, but it'll do for now. Have to get a blood transfusion after we meet with Irene. He walked over to the normal, non-mechanized sink and began to wash his wounds. These clothes, however, will not do. Step back a few feet and fire at me with your left cannon. Andrea complied, and out came a fresh pair of khakis. Another shot launched a sky-blue button-down. She attempted to fire again, but nothing came out. Out of ammo. I guess we'll live without the tie. He shrugged. This really feels like a tie meeting. But that's just life. Irene Clemente sat behind a modest desk covered in pictures of loved ones. The wall behind her held images of Irene, posed with every mayor New York City had seen over the last 3 decades, 2 presidents, 5 movie stars, 4 Yankee Hall of Famers, and Grandmaster Flash, the rapper, not the failed superhero who tried to appropriate his name. An impressive collection of frog statues also littered the room. A troublesome piece of paperwork had the entirety of her attention as Scott and Andrea stepped in through the open door. She looked up at them and immediately shook her head and stood up. No! Get out! Irene could not be taller than 4'10" and had to be over 75, but she had fierce eyes that suggested she could lift kitchen sink up and throw her out the window. Hello, Irene, Scott returned. No, said Irene. You get out of here right now, Scott. Don't take one step unless you have more pictures of that darling little baby boy of yours.
He's 4 and a half now, and he's got a little sister.
Pictures, Scott!
He took out his phone and began to flip through pictures. Scott's son playing soccer. Scott holding his baby daughter dressed like a fairy. Scott's son hugging Scott's daughter. Scott's children eating pizza on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. Irene shook her head.
How could such adorable children come from this guy?
She needled.
How did you explain that?
I married well.
Scott flipped to a picture with his whole family posed in front of the East River with the white stone bridge in the background, obvious to Andrea that he was standing on the Bronx side of the river.
How did you trick this woman into marrying you?
I gave her a better discount than the one I offered you.
Irene broke out in laughter.
I like you, Scott. You're wasting your time, and you're not getting any of my money, but I like you.
Who's talking about money? I came by to say hello, see how you're doing.
I'm horrible, Scott. Sleazy salesmen such as yourself, no offense, have been calling this office all day trying to figure out who to beg. I have to pay a disgusting amount to one of you jerks, and I don't get to keep a dime for myself. Don't you think I deserve half that money just for listening to the same sales pitch over and over and over again?
Only half.
And on top of that, I'm old. My back hurts. My grandson is talking about dropping out of college, and there's a giant alien murder egg hovering above my baseball team stadium. Who is your friend?
This is Kitchen Sink. I just thought you might want to meet the hero that saved New Rochelle.
I want to meet a masseuse and a pastry chef, and the man who will take me back to the Dominican Republic so I can lounge on the beach all day. Actually, I would like to meet a man who is all 3 of those. Also, I heard the electric general accidentally destroyed himself in New Rochelle.
Scott did not miss a beat. After being flustered and intimidated by Kitchen Sink, yes.
Hello!
Andrea meant to sound friendly, but the suit had no setting for that.
Dios mio, Scott! Tell him to calm down before it eats me.
Anyway, do you want to tell me that your company is so great and your superheroes are better than everyone else's, and if I don't go with you, the Bronx will burn and Earth will turn to ash? Scott nodded.
That was perfect. Have you considered working as a sales rep for CUP? In all seriousness, you know what you're doing. If you plan to pick another company, you must have your reasons.
I've been managing the defense allocation for 32 years, Scott.
Not sure why they hired you as an 8-year-old for the job, but please continue.
Irene allowed herself a smile. Oh, Scott. Flattery will get you nowhere, but please continue doing it. We're going to stay with the superheroes. It's a horrible name, but they're local and we trust them. They've been protecting us for 10 years, and they've earned a shot.
Sounds good.
I'm waiting for it, Scott. Go ahead. Get it out.
Scott shrugged. Listen, I am never one to say anything negative about the competition. We're all out here doing our best trying to protect the public. And maybe the super... that name. The superheroes can destroy a giant, potentially civilization-ending alien invasion. I wish you the best of luck with them. Since we're out of the running, I can just say, friend of friend, that you should ask them a few questions before signing this new contract.
With a face displaying complete suspicion, Irene asked,
what questions?
I would ask if their customer service has improved.
Irene's demeanor softened, going from unflappable to deeply concerned.
It is hard sometimes to get someone on the phone.
I would ask what they plan to do if this thing opens up tomorrow, with only 7 full-time superheroes. I don't see how they could be prepared, but you might want to ask.
They've said they'll add more.
Who? When? Are there going to be background checks? Because, and I'm not saying anything negative about them, but it has been said that some companies, not necessarily them, cut corners there, and that is why Dutchess County canceled their contract for cause.
She nodded.
I do have my concerns about the Bronx Bull.
A great guy. Met him recently, don't have a bad thing to say about him, but is he the one leading the assault on that egg? Exploding Vinny? Listen, if they can do it, great. But CUP is the leader in this industry. King Tiger, the Big Axe, Senora Fuego, Inspector Well Actually, Rabbi Diamond, Lightning Wong, and Kitchen Sink. Those are just the staff we have based in Manhattan. I can call in hundreds of them, all the superheroes you need here, in time to defeat this menace and preserve the Bronx Zoo, Arthur Avenue, and the New York Botanical Garden. Did I ever tell you that's where I proposed to my wife?
You wanted to do it in front of her favorite flower, but then you forgot what he was, so you had to call your brother, who reminded you. And then you got lost, and she got bored, and you ended up proposing in the parking lot.
She still said yes.
Irene's cell phone buzzed. She held up a finger as she answered the call.
Sí, amorcito. I'm in a... Oh, did he? Okay. I'm going to call you back in 5 minutes, and you can tell me all about it.
She set down the phone and stared in disbelief at Scott.
Apparently, King Tiger made a surprise visit to my youngest grandson's school.
Huh. What are the odds?
Scott pondered.
He's Benny's favorite superhero.
I believe you mentioned that last time we spoke. Are there any bullies giving Benny a hard time? Because we consider bullies to be supervillains. I am only mostly kidding.
What kind of guarantees would I get? What if I'm unhappy with your superheroes?
Then the Bronx will be destroyed, and likely the entire planet soon after. Other than that, we can write up a contract that protects you from liability for any damage not covered by insurance.
Irene tapped her fingers on the table thoughtfully.
What I'm realizing is that if I just sign with you, I won't have to actually talk to the other snake oil salesmen who are no doubt lined up outside. Write up the contract, Scott. God, I knew you'd come in here and steal my money.
Scott and Irene shook hands. Andrea waved and attempted to softly say goodbye, but it came out as far more threatening than anticipated.
Adios! See you soon!
It also felt disrespectful to throw in an adios.
Get it out, Scott.
As Andrea exited with Scott, he leaned over to her and whispered,
We have to take the stairs to the roof and call for an attack ship to pick us up. That van is probably laden with explosives by now.
He collapsed into her arms. Chapter 5. The Big Axe, Superhero.
Shots!
Mizzo had explained to the gathered employees at Cup HQ that this was not a time to celebrate. They had won the contract, but that only meant a massive rollout and an increased workload for every employee. Dispatch would have to move as many superheroes as possible to the Bronx from across the country, while not compromising preparedness in their other territories. Human resources needed to find more superheroes to support this effort. Finance had to process their largest order ever and make sure they accounted for every dime in case the government audited them and found they had allowed for too large a profit margin and not devoted the requisite resources to this project. Also, a man-bull had gored their friend Scott a little bit. This was no time to celebrate. Everyone had nodded somberly. Then she smiled.
Oh, heck, y'all. Office-sponsored happy hour after work.
Now the Cup team celebrated their victory at the Ginger Man in Midtown.
Shots!
Señora Fuego again called out. Dressed in her improbably tight jeans and faded sky blue t-shirt with King Tiger's cartoonish image across the front. Kermit from Human Resources, Shirley from Traffic Dispatch, and Bernard from IT lined up at the bar with Señora Fuego to throw down medium-quality whiskey.
Uno, dos, tres,
called Señora Fuego, followed by enthusiastic chugging. Señora Fuego's complexion changed to an unnatural orange for a moment.
Mind if I join you?
Rabbi Diamond asked Andrea. Go right ahead. Andrea felt uneasy around all religious figures, not just aliens with diamond for skin, who had escaped the destruction of their home planet as babies, crash-landed in the Williamsburg neighborhood of Brooklyn, and been taken in by an Orthodox Jewish family. She felt every moment spent with a member of the clergy was another chance to accidentally make an inappropriate joke or insult them. Reconsidering, she decided that this was not confined to members of the clergy, but just about anyone with whom she politely chatted. This was not an idle worry. If Andrea had a superpower, it was the ability to say the absolutely wrong thing when she could have said nothing. She referred to this act as pulling an Andrea Vernon. A few examples. 1.
Yeah, but you don't actually believe that, right?
2.
God, I would kill myself if I had to go to college there.
Where are you planning on going? 3.
Yeah, but you're too old to have kids anyway, right?
Alcohol only exacerbated the situation. Even now, she really, really wondered about how these superheroes had sex. Señora Fuego could raise her skin temperature thousands of degrees. Could she control that while making love? Andrea had briefly met Señora Fuego's wife, and she wasn't covered in soot and burn marks. What about Rabbi Diamond, whose exterior was actual diamond? So many questions.
Was it all diamond? All of it?
It was for the best she had a job that forbade her to ask questions. She continued to remind herself not to talk to the superheroes about their genitals. She saw the big axe enter, and had to remind herself one more time.
You know, said Rabbi Diamond, I was born on a planet untold light years from here, but I do enjoy a nice glass of red wine.
I'm from Queens, and I'm right there with you. The two clinked glasses and drank. Even for this casual after-work event, Rabbi Diamond wore his usual black suit with his black yarmulke. No hair grew out of his angular exterior. His face was human-like, but full of angles rather than a soft curve.
The Talmud tells us there is no true happiness without wine, Rabbi Diamond continued.
I'm starting to understand Judaism.
A drunken ball of wee headed toward them, and as it slowed, revealed itself to be Evan from customer service.
We got the contract! Wee! Cried Evan.
Yes, agreed Andrea. Yes, we did. Evan's fist pumped the air.
You're really pretty. You too, Rabbi.
And Evan was gone.
It is a big deal, said Rabbi Diamond. My own planet was destroyed when I was just a baby. Now we have the opportunity to defend this planet, where Adonai created Adam and Eve. One wonders if we are his chosen defenders. Oh, but look at me going on. You should talk with your friends, not be stuck with this old rabbi made of diamonds conjecturing on the will of the Lord.
Señora Fuego stepped on the bar and shouted,
Let's dance, cuppers!
Salsa music played over the jukebox and she began to gyrate to the music. This was a pub and not a dance club, but a superhero did not trifle with such distinctions. Rabbi Diamond bowed slightly to Andrea.
And now I leave you. Sadly, I have a rule about leaving work drinks before it gets too weird.
Smart and made of diamonds, Andrea replied.
And yet, when my wife first introduced me to her mother, she said, Not a doctor? I'm leaving.
Of all the 50-ish employees still present at the happy hour, Andrea would guess 7 had any aptitude at dancing. The other 43 made up for lack of aptitude with willingness to dance anyway.
What's up, killer?
Asked the big axe as he took over Rabbi Diamond's space. The two fist bumped and performed their normal ritual with the big axe shaking his hand as though Andrea had just broken it, and Andrea staring at her own hand in amazement at the sheer power she possessed. I am contractually unable to ask about your day, Andrea said. This had become another of their catchphrases with one another. Andrea could ask no questions, but she could hint.
Well, replied the big axe, and we'll get to you defeating the Bronx Bull in hand-to-hand combat in a moment.
Horn to robot cape, but continue.
I had to go to Stamford to fight some evil robots who were trying to destroy one of the banks up there.
Fascinating.
So I used diplomacy and reason to convince them not to do that.
Andrea shook her head. I don't believe you. The big axe threw up his hands as though he'd been found out.
You got me. I chopped them all in half with a baseball bat.
I believe part of your story.
You got me. I used my axe.
I now believe all of your story. This was also a game they played. The big axe would claim that he defeated Professor Poison through a complex series of riddles and then admit he used his axe. Or he would say he'd stopped giant porcupine zombies by beating them in a game of chess and then confess it had actually been an axing. Andrea enjoyed this game. She found that because she was Ms. O's administrative assistant, most of her colleagues viewed her with a small amount of distrust. No, not a small amount. People eyeballed her the same way crime lords in movies looked at people right before they ripped open that person's shirt and yelled, You wearing a wire? You wearing a wire? The big axe did not treat her that way. He was her buddy. While he was often gruff and bitterly sarcastic with everyone else, he was fun and sweet with her. Fun and sweet in a totally platonic way, Andrea reminded herself. The big axe smiled.
I heard you got to beat the crap out of someone today.
I challenged the Bronx Bull to a dance-off, and I was declared the unanimous victor.
I believe part of your story.
I tricked him into ramming his horns into the wall of a diner.
Clever.
Thank you. The big axe laughed.
I was talking about Kitchen Sink, but you did good too. You probably deserve a drink for that.
Andrea had planned to follow Rabbi Diamond's example and step out before getting tipsy in front of her colleagues, but now that the big axe was here, this event qualified as a party. I believe it's rum and coke o'clock. Andrea could feel the return of her old friend, Lady Andrea, Duchess of Horrible Ideas. She was definitely not going to do anything dumb with the big axe. Her buddy. Platonic buddy. She was, however, going to have a couple rum and cokes on Cuff's dime. What followed was a nice, completely platonic conversation. The big axe did his impersonation of Ms. O's perfect posture. They sang along to the jukebox, poorly. As the night sped by, the crowd of cuppers cleared.
I grew up on a farm in Indiana, began the origin story of the big axe.
Nobody actually lives on farms, though. That's the first problem I have with your story, Andrea interrupted.
Well, we did. Me and my mom. My dad skipped town when I was a month old, so it was just me and her in the house. I was a tiny kid.
Obviously, Andrea interrupted again.
The smallest in my classes all the way into high school. Had a bad attitude, so I got the crap beat out of me all the time. I could never stand bullies, and I'd rather they give me a black eye or a bloody nose than just be afraid of them.
Totally confusing, since I bully you at the office every single day, Andrea interrupted again.
Yes, but I enjoy your bullying. Anyway, on my 15th birthday, I walk out into my living room and I see my mom sitting there stewing about something.
Stewing! Farm! Indiana! Andrea interrupted again.
Tells me when my dad left, he said he knew he'd never be any kind of father to me, but he wanted to leave me one thing.
He named you Sue. Wait, no, that's a Johnny Cash song. Andrea started waving her hand around in the air. I know. It was an axe. She took a solid chug of rum and coke. Wait, no, this was just rum. She had grown bored of soda and all of its empty calories. Now seemed like an apt time to worry about calories.
Yup. She took me out to the barn, shows it to me, and says, "He said to give it to you when you were ready." And then she walked out. I wanted to throw it in the trash. He'd never done anything for me or my mom.
Can you please call her Ma? I believe farm folk call their mothers Ma. Thank you. More rum disappeared into her mouth.
Finally, I pick it up. And there's nothing special about it. It's just a normal-sized axe.
Important plot point left out previously.
But after I pick it up, every bit of my being burned like nothing I've ever felt before. My entire body started to expand. I ripped right through my clothes.
Oh. Andrea was almost definitely not going to hook up with her work buddy. Not likely.
And the axe grew right with me, and when it was all done, I was this size. I mean, can you imagine what that was like? A 15-year-old growing into a giant in seconds?
I don't know. If everything grew, proportionally, I bet you'd be a pretty happy 15-year-old. Oh, that crossed the line.
Andrea Vernon, you dog.
Okay. It was time to accept reality. Andrea cleared her throat.
I hope your place is close, 'cause I want to go make out.
I'll call a cab,
the big axe offered.
Cool. Can we make out a little here first?
Chapter 6. Evan Laxby, Bids and Contracts Associate.
Contracts by design are harder to follow than a drunk piano player, Ms. O said as she looked down at the circuitous document in front of her.
Andrea nodded.
To get to work each day, Andrea walked to the Ditmars Boulevard subway stop, took the N train to Queensboro Plaza, switched to the 7 train, exited at Grand Central, waited for the back car of the shuttle to Times Square, showed her cup ID to the guards on the train, held on tightly to the handrail as the rear car detached itself, held on tighter when it executed a series of disorienting turns, and finally got off with the other employees at the secret Cup HQ subway stop. It seemed excessive, considering anyone who wanted could look out the office windows and see exactly where they were in relation to the rest of Manhattan. Then again, she had never knowingly seen the exterior of the building. Her commute this morning had begun not in Astoria, Queens, but in the Big Axe's apartment in East Harlem. She had attempted to sneak out the door in the dark morning hours, but the Big Axe, superhero that he was, insisted on driving her home in the Axe-mobile, which was actually the name of his truck, the Axe-mobile. She was pleasantly surprised to find that the Big Axe's radio had been left on NPR, and she had concentrated on their reporting and analysis of the egg crisis. Experts agreed that this could prove to be the most serious existential threat in living memory, but were split on whether everyone was going to die because of it, while trying to push through a pretty substantial hangover. She had returned to her apartment to take a short but restorative shower that she hoped would, A, heal all of the negative effects of a long night of drinking and extracurricular activity, and, B, remove any hint of the Big Axe. She worked with superheroes, and while none were known to have the ability of super smell, because sending a person who possessed that ability to live in New York City seemed like a cruel punishment from a petty Greek god, she would not take any chances. The Big Axe did not possess an unpleasant smell, but he did have a distinctive odor of overalls and axe wax. The man kept a well-waxed axe, and that had its consequences.
Yes, a very confusing document, Andrea agreed. Evan Laxby of Bids and Contracts had sent up the document first thing this morning, noting that his team had worked on it all the previous night with the Bronx County Defense Allocation Fund Oversight Committee, while the rest of CUP had been out enjoying their free drinks and giggles. Ms. O promised them pizza for lunch, and all was well. Ms. O had given the document to Andrea to chew up and then regurgitate to her like a baby bird, as she had a lot on her plate, two different metaphors, as she was not suggesting baby birds ate from plates. After spending the entire morning digging into the contract, grinding through all of the party of the first parts and the heretofore notwithstandings, Andrea now felt confident to present, also a little nauseous. If we destroy the egg and all of its contents with no property damage or loss of life, then we receive all of the funds potentially available and will remain the protectors of Bronx County for a period of 2 additional years. Ms. O nodded.
I like that you started with the positive, Andrea. Now, tell me all the what-ifs.
If the earth is destroyed, we do not receive any money.
Harsh, but fair, Ms. O said with a smirk.
Andrea continued, if the earth is saved, but all of the Bronx is completely destroyed, a federal review panel will assess our performance and pay out an amount they feel is appropriate.
The sea captain will become a potato farmer before that review gets done.
Yes, Andrea said, unable to add to the parable of the sea captain. Bids and Contracts was able to set up parameters for how much damage and loss of life could occur within Bronx County. Andrea handed Ms. O the very aesthetically pleasing chart with an easy-to-follow graphical representation of how X number of Bronx residents eaten by aliens translated to Y dollars deducted from CUP's fee. "That is a handsome chart there," Ms. O beamed, proud of her Bids and Contracts department. Andrea had learned that in the early days of privatization, states and counties had put bounties out on supervillains, which created a heap of problems. Most significant, there would always be a lag from when a problem arose to when a team could get out there. That lag allowed the evil cockroach muter Humanicide enough time to force the citizens of Mississippi to elect him governor and cancel the bounty on himself. He held that title for 3 months until the president sent in the U.S. Army to depose him. Andrea had heard that while Mississippians celebrated the demise of the cruel insect tyrant, many remained bitter at the federal government's intrusion and still flew Humanicide banners on their front porches to this day. When a system of territorial contracts became the new norm, many problems were solved. Over the years, however, the stipulations of those contracts needed to become more and more specific. San Diego County had only covered damage done directly to its citizens and property, and was left without legal recourse when Mega Defense failed to stop Apollo Greed from blocking the sun for a whole year. Now, every agreement between a governmental body and a superhero corp had to account for all such possibilities. "We do have some leeway with property damage given the uncertainty of the event," Andrea explained. "There are also deductions if the aliens are defeated but mate with humans first and create a new hybrid species. Also deductions if the planet is unharmed but transported across the universe and kept as a living zoo slash hunting range for the amusement of another planet." "That's pretty standard for these contracts," Ms. O said dismissively. Andrea felt silly for even bringing those points up as she continued. "There are, of course, the other usual stipulations that we can negotiate only an unconditional surrender from the alien invaders. If we decide to partner with the aliens against the rest of humanity, we will not receive any money. The one unusual part is that if the alien race that sent the egg comes to Earth and travels to anywhere outside of our territory, the superhero corps that patrol those territories will be eligible for a cut of the funds." "Oh, I see," Ms. O said. "So, if the contents of the egg or the masters of the egg escape to Staten Island, for instance, Superbia would be eligible for half of the money. If a third company became involved, say if the aliens in question made it out to Suffolk County, you know, if they wanted to check out the Hamptons, I have a summer house out there and I can tell you the aliens should save themselves the trip," Ms. O interjected. "Yes," said Andrea, "if they went to Suffolk County and Mega Defense stepped in, then we would be splitting the money three ways." Ms. O picked up the bound contract and began to flip through it. "Thank you, Andrea. That was concise and informative. And here I was worried everyone would be off their game the day after last night's celebratory work drinks." Andrea gave a slight bow and exited to go spend her lunch hour sleeping on a toilet. Chapter 7. The Vernons. Family. "Pass the Diriyak pool, Dr. Vernon."
"Right away, Professor Vernon Blanchard."
Andrea's siblings had taken to formal titles years before. What started as a mildly annoying game over Thanksgiving dinner had become a never-ending status reminder.
"How's work these days, State Senator Vernon?"
"Quite well, Dr. Vernon."
At least there were only three of them. She imagined a table filled with astronaut Vernon, Football Hall of Famer Vernon, Nobel Peace Prize winner Vernon, and true messiah and redeemer of man Vernon.
What about you, administrative assistant Vernon? How's the office grind?
She had enjoyed this game for a brief period of time when they had called her World Traveler Vernon, but less so when they moved on to Unemployed Vernon, and then the well-intentioned Vernon, Unaffiliated. It's going good, State Senator Vernon. They pay me. No one at CUP had mentioned whether she was allowed to discuss her job with outsiders, or possibly Kermit Waltz had explained this very point while they were zooming down the halls on their transporters, and she had missed it while debating whether she had made a terrible mistake. Either way, she could not ask questions and was perfectly happy to not discuss the details of her life with her family. The siblings mockingly clapped in unison. Mother Vernon and Father Vernon smiled, as they always smiled, content to see their children getting along. Sitting in their American home with their American children, talking about their American problems. Their parents had earned this house, these children, and these relatively tiny problems.
Administrative Assistant Vernon, how long do you think you'll stay at this job?
Andrea shrugged. Money's good. I like my boss. Not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. Her three siblings instantly began their exaggerated fake heart attack routines.
Whoa!
asked Professor Vernon Blanchard. You never plan to stay anywhere for long. You're always one foot out the door, planning your trip to Vienna or Sarajevo.
Perhaps, Mother Vernon suggested, she is happy to be close to her family. So wonderful to see our children all together, Father Vernon added.
They did this once a month, but every time her parents acted as though all three of their children had just been ransomed from three separate kidnappers. Professor Vernon Blanchard's husband, Dr. Vernon's wife, and State Senator Vernon's wife were next door at Dr. Vernon's house with their five cumulative children.
And such a beautiful family, Mother Vernon boasted. Perhaps our Andrea might stay here long enough to meet someone and give us more grandchildren. We need more babies in this family. Such joy.
Andrea's father looked like he had just been freed from a collapsed mine and told he won the lottery while imagining grandchild number 6. Luckily, Dr. Vernon steered the conversation in a new direction.
Hey, speaking of reproduction, anybody else nervous about the giant alien egg in the Bronx?
Professor Vernon Blanchard shook her head. Very nervous. Who knows what could be inside? I just hope the army takes care of it. The distinguished New York State Senator from District 14 objected.
See, now this is what upsets me. Everyone thinks it's the government that's fighting these aliens and supervillains, but it's not. We are contracting out our safety and our very existence to private business.
I had no idea, replied Professor Vernon Blanchard.
It's true. There's this whole sleazy world of superheroes for hire. We're paying corporations to keep us safe from monsters, but they're creating monsters of their own, and there's no accountability.
Just awful, agreed Dr. Vernon with a corresponding headshake of disapproval.
The state senator had only just begun.
When I run for Congress next year, this is what I'm going to put a stop to. We can't trust corporations to protect us. The government should be in charge of our national defense.
Government couldn't run a candy store in Hungrytown, Andrea immediately regretted speaking.
What? Hungrytown? We were doing just fine before we let corporations hire and create superheroes. The problem now is that we've created an arms race for these companies, trying to make more and more powerful heroes. Now, the villains have had to become more evil and more cunning, and a lot of those villains are former heroes that were financed with government funds.
Andrea saw a headline in her mind that read, Andrea Vernon ruins another family dinner. Still, she continued. You want Congress to run things instead of business, but Congress isn't any better. They stepped aside because they weren't able to do the job.
No.
Too many politicians succumbed to big money and made the wrong decision. America should face these threats, not some company no one's ever heard of. That's not what we were founded on. That's not our Constitution.
Right. I forgot. The Constitution promises that only the government can create superhero teams.
You've changed, Administrative Assistant Vernon.
State Senator Vernon fumed.
You used to believe in America. And now you only believe in big business. Working for that plastic utensil manufacturer has changed you.
State Senator Vernon, I think if we left this to the government, they would create a committee that would call for a study, and that study would recommend the creation of a subcommittee to re-examine the possible ramifications of a second study, and before anything got done, the egg would open and we'd all die. But it would be okay, because I'd die in an anti-business democracy. Woo! USA! With a mixture of seething hostility and purposeful condescension, State Senator Vernon said,
You watch. You see what happens. You see what happens when we let these companies get so big and their heroes become so powerful that the country can't oppose them. If we don't stop them soon, then someday they will break us and demand we kneel before them. King Tiger can chew through steel, and Senora Fuego can melt it. If the government doesn't do something soon, think how much more powerful they can become. Do you even know who owns these companies?
Well, Andrea thought, my company is run by shadowy figures who have never been glimpsed by their employees and only communicate through dreams. She did not say this.
Such intelligent debate,
Father Vernon exclaimed.
Our children all together, said Mother Vernon. We need more babies.
Chapter 8. Inspector Well Actually, Superhero.
Yes, guys broke my best hero's horns, and now you're gonna come into my burrow and tell me that it's my fault?
Connor Geiss, president and founder of Da Superheroes, cracked his knuckles. In his late 50s and still dyeing his hair red, Connor spoke loudly so the whole restaurant could hear. He rubbed his pinky ring against his right palm and licked his lips.
I should be asking you to send Kitchen Sink over to me. This is my borough.
Connor, you live in Tarrytown, Ms. O said. You don't live in the Bronx, and as of last Friday, your Bronx contract was paid out, so you don't work here either. This borough belongs to you like the pig belongs to the mosquito.
Am I the pig or the mosquito? 'Cause either way, you are right out of line, and I don't have to stand for this. Also, you know I hate Mexican food. Why are we at a Mexican restaurant?
Ms. O gave a shrug as she picked up a chip. You'll have to forgive my administrative assistant, Connor. Andrea gets very confused sometimes. In truth, Andrea had selected the venue. Earlier that day, Ms. O had asked Andrea to pick a Mexican restaurant in the Bronx, and she chose Taqueria Tlaxcali, an informal and unpretentious spot with her favorite guacamole in the city. Andrea felt such pure joy about the guacamole that she took no offense to being described as easily confused. Connor snorted and gave a half glance at Andrea.
Yeah, young people these days.
Behind Connor stood Exploding Vinny, who just looked like a guy named Vinny. He wore a black Adidas tracksuit and sported an awful mustache. On the other side of the table, Ms. O had Andrea sitting on one side of her and the big axe on the other.
You know Vinny can sit, right?
Ms. O asked.
He don't sit.
I can sit, boss,
Exploding Vinny offered.
Go to the car. I told you not to talk, and you talked. Now go to the car,
Connor yelled. Vinny obediently walked his mustache outside.
I want Bronx Bull in jail,
Ms. O declared flatly. I have the footage from Kitchen Sink of what happened, so he's done. You can protect him and force me to send my team after him, or you can make it easy on yourself. The waiter approached and began placing everyone's plate in front of them. I have the braised pork burrito for the man who said he explodes. Did the man leave? She asked, as Connor brusquely waved her off. Andrea and the big axe dug into their burritos while Ms. O and Connor stared each other down.
Fine. You get Bronx Bull. His horns are broken and I can't afford to fix them. So you get to send him off to Cromwell. But you have to agree you won't poach none of my other soups.
Andrea could see in Ms. O's eyes that she had already won this day. She only had to finish off her opponent. Rather than rush, she cut into her enchilada and lifted a chunk into her mouth. She took a long, slow chew, swallowed, and waited a few more seconds before asking, "You're gonna hold on to 6 superheroes, Connor. You got nothing left."
"I got Putnam County."
"Sell off what you got and move to Florida," Ms. O advised. "Outsource Putnam County to Cup. I'll buy Professor Hot Sauce's contract from you. I'll also take Gunhill Guns. I can use them against the egg, and the two of them can stay in Putnam after that. The rest are worthless to me." Connor tried to look insulted, then flabbergasted, and then he gave up.
"Yeah, fine. But you gotta take Vinny, too."
"No."
"Fine. But I'm gonna take my time moving to Florida."
The two finished their lunches peacefully. Ms. O presented Connor with contracts for the transferal of the two superheroes because, as she put it, trusting a handshake deal was like leaving the barn door open during a thunderstorm. She picked up the check and told Connor never to come back to the Bronx again. It was less dramatic than the big axe cutting a villain in half or King Tiger ripping apart a missile before it destroyed Carnegie Hall, but in one lunch, Ms. O permanently ended the superheroes. She would never have to say the name again.
"Let's go, Andrea," she said. "We have to go look at an egg."
Up close, Andrea could hear the subtle but persistent humming sound that emanated from the egg. She could see the texture, not smooth like a chicken egg's, but rough and leathery. Its purple exterior shifted to dark oranges in some spots, but only for brief moments. She wondered what could be inside. Millions of invading aliens that would hatch, breed, and dominate the planet? An extraterrestrial demon baby that would burst out and destroy all of humanity searching for its mother? Chocolate? Probably not chocolate, but maybe. It could be chocolate sent by a peaceful but mischievous planet that just wanted to freak us out before giving us a nice present. No, she decided. She was assigning qualities of her ex-boyfriend to an invading alien race. It was probably not chocolate. Ms. O glared at the egg hovering above them in the outfield and then back at Inspector Well actually.
"So, what is it?" she asked. "What have you figured out?"
Inspector Well actually scratched at the soul patch that valiantly tried to cover the point of his chin. He wore an ill-fitting suit and high-top sneakers, and a fedora for some reason. After turning to Ms. O and giving the impression he would speak, he turned right back and stared at the egg. Inspector Well actually came into this world as a seemingly normal baby who grew into an obnoxious know-it-all child and then a completely insufferable adult. His unique power might never have come to light had it not been for a Cup employee who met him at a bar in Inspector Well Actually's home neighborhood of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
"Well, actually," the employee overheard, "a koala bear is not actually a bear at all. Well, actually, you may think you're hungry, but more often people are actually dehydrated and misinterpret their thirst as hunger." Well, actually, it's not a nice night because I can smell that there's a fire in a residential building 6 miles from here.
Inspector Well actually had the most powerful and highest capacity brain of any human ever discovered, but he could only access his genius by correcting others. Inspector Well actually was not well liked. Andrea would say everyone hated him, but well actually, there are billions of people who had never met him. He worked in tandem with his girlfriend Kayla, a patient and sweet young woman. When the Empress of Destruction threatened to destroy all of Sacramento with her death ray, Inspector Well actually and Kayla were dispatched to the West Coast. After the local heroes showed the duo the video the Empress had sent with her demands, it fell upon Kayla to say, "There's no way of knowing where she could be hiding," so that Inspector Well actually could condescendingly tut-tut her and say, "Well, actually, if you listen to the wind patterns behind her and look at the type of dirt on the floor, it's pretty obvious she's at the building on the corner of Lincoln and Pacific in Roseville, California." He saved hundreds of thousands of lives in the most loathsome manner possible. Andrea surveyed the area. "I do not see Kayla." Ms. O's lip twitched. "Damn it. Inspector Well actually, where's Kayla?" Inspector Well actually avoided her gaze. "She's gone. She said all I ever do is correct her. And I said, well, actually, I do many other things. I eat, I jog, I watch television, I do Ken puzzles." Kayla did not appreciate my response. "Get her back," Ms. O instructed. "Tell her you were dumber than a pig working as a waiter in a barbecue restaurant and you're sorry." "I tried apologizing. I wrote her a song and played it outside her window. She said she wanted to forgive me and that she loved me with all of her heart. I said, well, actually, the heart has nothing to do with love. All emotions exist in the brain. She asked me to leave."
"So, would you say you can't solve the mystery of the alien murder egg that is going to end humanity because you couldn't just shut your mouth? Is that about it, Inspector Well, actually?"
"Yes, ma'am. It would seem that way."
Ms. O bit her lip. "Andrea, fix this donkey orgy of a situation we got going on right now. I'm going to home plate to imagine I lived my dreams of playing professional baseball. You know what you have to do."
She smoothly walked across the infield in her high heels and took a batter's stance behind home plate. Andrea watched her let an imaginary pitch go by for what Ms. O felt was a ball outside.
"So..." Andrea had no end to the sentence ready. She just hated this man. She gathered all of her inner strength and said, "There is just no way to figure what this egg is or where it came from."
"I see what you're doing, and well, actually, you're starting off way too big. Kayla knew how to work up to it. She was great. I just wish she could accept me as the person I am. Someone who was really great."
Andrea took a deep breath and thought about the thousands of people she had seen gathered around the stadium. People had been trying to get close to the egg, to see the danger that threatened all of them. Some of them held signs begging for peace, some for the egg's immediate destruction, and some held signs saying, "What is the government covering up with this egg hoax?" and "Fake egg." "Sorry if I'm a little rusty, Inspector Well, actually. I was up until 4 last night."
"Well, actually, you were up until 4 this morning."
"I see. I was up because I had to drive from Queens out to Long Island."
"Well, actually, you can't drive from Queens to Long Island. Queens is on Long Island. You must be referring to Nassau or Suffolk County."
Ms. O took a hard swing, but Andrea could see from her reaction that she had whiffed.
"All right, you look warmed up now. Let's crack this Humpty Dumpty."
"Well, actually, if you read the actual poem,
It never actually says that Humpty Dumpty is an egg, actually.
Thank you, Inspector. Well, actually, but we should get started. We've spent 5 minutes talking about this, and now we have 5 minutes less to figure this out than when we started.
Well, actually, we've been speaking for 1 minute and 47 seconds at the end of this sentence. Also, when referring to something quantifiable like minutes, you would say fewer instead of less. Proper word choice is important.
Was his goatee glowing? It looked like his goatee was glowing.
Andrea rolled the dice.
Must have been crazy for this egg to travel all the way from whatever planet it came from.
Well, actually, it didn't travel the whole way. If you look at the exterior, it obviously hasn't suffered the effects of a prolonged voyage. It must have gone through a wormhole.
Andrea found herself stroking an imaginary goatee on her chin. Super weird how a wormhole randomly opened up right near Earth.
Well, actually, we have never detected a wormhole previously, and it must have passed through very close to us. Someone must have artificially created a wormhole with the intention of sending this egg through.
Well, it was nice of them to send a penguin egg through. Penguins are my favorite animal. A powerful sigh emitted from Inspector Well, actually, and he elevated an inch above the ground.
Well, actually, this can't be a penguin. Not only because of the size and the shape and the fact that it came from an alien planet. The exterior is extremely thick, and if you could see all the colors I can right now, you'd know that it's actually shielding radioactivity.
Great. I'll let Ms. O know to just blast this thing open right away.
Well, actually, you don't want to open it. If you do, all the radiation will spill out, and it's enough to kill everyone within 1,000 miles. Even then, the creature inside, which is obviously feeding off of and absorbing the energy, would still be strong enough to destroy the rest of the planet.
Word, Inspector Well, actually. We just wait, and when it opens, we'll find out.
Well, actually, we may find out when whoever sent the egg ahead of them comes through the wormhole. I can see the egg left a trail behind in a color frequency that you wouldn't be able to imagine, so I won't bore you. Someone or something is supposed to follow, likely to kill all of humanity.
At least we have years to prepare.
Well, actually, Andrea, it's completely obvious from the rate of growth that the egg is going to hatch within the next 2 weeks. So we actually have very little time, given that this is the most significant threat to the existence of life on this planet in the last 65 million years.
Cool. It seems there's no hope, and we're all going to die. Silence. More silence. Inspector Well actually removed his fedora.
Maybe.
Chapter 9. King Tiger, Superhero and Field Supervisor. Previous to her employment at CUP, Andrea's apartment consisted of the following permanent items. One futon, one dresser, donated by Professor Vernon Blanchard, one laptop computer, one plastic lawn chair for guests, a refrigerator, a microwave, and a laundry basket. In the 2 months since starting at CUP, Andrea had felt confident splurging on a real bed, a respectably sized but not ostentatiously large television, 3 wooden chairs for favored guests, a blender, a pizza cooking toaster oven, 8 hard plastic plates reserved for guests, paper would do just fine for eating alone, 4 wine glasses, 4 glasses that were just normal glasses, that might have a more specific name that she was not aware of, 8 knives, 8 spoons, 8 forks, a bookcase, and a seltzer maker. She had not yet felt financially comfortable purchasing a couch, but she had narrowed the search down to 3 options and would decide in 2 pay periods. Sitting on her bed, she watched the television that she had mounted on the wall like a real adult.
Late-night programming was a joy she had missed out on during her years of travel and not owning a television. More than the shows, she enjoyed the commercials that featured cup superheroes. She had found that superheroes were surprisingly regional. While they could make the national news for saving